And now we continue part two of Serenity in the Buff.
Riders love tropes as much as they love transvestites.
Now, this is weird. I have done some freaky shit.
Hey boys, I have a headache.
That makes absolutely no goddamn sense whatsoever.
Movies in the Buff.
If I start fighting a war, you'll see something new. And then They break into River's dream. And it was completely just killing the moment for me.
Yeah, but you know, that's an interesting bit of foreshadowing there. If I have to start fighting a war, you'll see something new.
Mm-hmm.
And later, see the moment where Mao starts fighting the war.
Mm-hmm.
Where he basically, you know, says, you are either with me or you walk away or I will shoot you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, that is when he shifted gears, and that is the war mentality. He's basically told Inara, you've never seen that side of me.
Yeah. And the one thing, if there's one thing that losing Serenity Valley taught Mal, and it comes across real well in this movie, it's that you take whatever you've got at hand and find a way to make a weapon out of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you don't give up anymore. You know what
I
mean? You don't stop. But what I'm talking about more about losing the point was the river dream. You know, the dream sequence that she has right after that. You know, where she's floating above it in the little message thing. I don't know what to call it.
Right.
The little video screen. And the whole movie could have done without that. It felt like it really killed the feeling there. And even worse than that, it got that...
They had to have a way to figure out where Miranda was.
Right, and that was what that dream sequence was, with her remembering the location of Miranda.
It was just...
I bet my whole crew's lives on the fact that you're a person, whole and there, and if I'm wrong about that, you just shoot me now.
Click.
Or we could just talk some more.
Yeah. In the scene... Sorry, when they get back to Haven and you find out that it's been destroyed and everything, after, you know, she plugs in the coordinates, did anybody else notice that Jane is actually holding Vera?
No, I did.
And in a later on scene when they're flying through Reaver territory, he's cuddling up to Vera. Like, if you look at him in the background,
he's
like cuddling Vera. I loved it.
Which, again, makes sense. It's one of those... It's a Joss Easter egg. It's there if you see it, and it's not if you don't.
Yeah. And
and for those of you who haven't seen Firefly, Vera is Jane's favorite gun.
Okay, just to get this out of the way, for those of you who haven't seen Firefly but watch this movie so you could listen to our show, go back and watch Firefly, because it's streaming too. Damn.
Yeah. Seriously, what are you waiting
for? Don't look at this as a 90-minute movie. Look at this as the culmination of a 15-hour movie.
Exactly.
But then you have the I'm a Monster scene that we discussed earlier, and Mal gets an idea. And I love the fact that Nathan Fillion is such a facial actor that you can actually see the moment when the idea hits him. And that's just amazing acting. That's not something that can be taught. That's pure talent right there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, am I mistaken, or the idea hit him while he was talking to the operative?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's why he clicked the screen off while the operative, right in the middle of, like, he interrupted the operative to turn the screen off.
Mm-hmm. He hung up on him.
Yep.
Yeah. It's because that's where the idea hit him.
And... Who found it mildly entertaining going through and watching it this time that, according to this movie, Google Wave lasted long enough to make it to the 23rd or the 25th century?
Then we've already discussed the get to work argument. I did like the way Serenity looked after this, with the bone front and all of that.
As bad as they had to mess her up to pull this off, I did kind of get a cool feeling about how it looked.
Yeah. And little interesting.
But I do understand Zoe's reaction. You're going to turn our home into an abomination.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And once again, this ends justifies the means situation.
Well, and we are glossing over a very important moment that occurs just before that.
The premature death of Book?
Yeah.
The death of Shepherd Book, which I will argue was necessary, and so was something else that's going to happen shortly.
Well, since
and when we get to that, I'll explain why.
Yeah, it was necessary for this movie, but I think had this still been Firefly, this would not be here.
Well, and supposedly I've heard that the reason why there was contractual reasons that basically the studio had said we want everyone to be on board for a potential sequel if the movie does well, which of course it didn't.
Right.
But Ron Glass was not able to commit, and therefore his character. But there's dramatic reason why. This and the other thing is necessary, and we'll get to that when we get to
so
that.
So just since Book died here, I just have to say, let's have a moment of silence for poor old Tintin. Reference to older episode. Sorry.
Yeah. And I've just got to point out, in Firefly, did they ever make mention of the fact that his first name is Daryl?
Never.
No. Same thing. The first time you find it is on the tombstone.
Okay. And that's just a bizarre name.
Did you see Wash's first name?
Is it Hoban?
Hoban.
Yeah. Coben Washburn, that's right.
Hoban with an H.
Hoban.
Hoban. Yeah. And that is made reference to in Firefly.
I think so. Somewhere, I don't remember where. But I love the Reaver space part, but it presented an interesting question for me. The way these Reavers act and the way they react to things makes me wonder how they keep these ships in space.
Badly.
Yeah, not very well, obviously. But
if you remember, the first time we see them, it's made comment about how they're running with an unshielded reactor core.
And,
which can't be good for you.
A friend of mine a long time ago brought up this point. And actually, Carl, I believe this was before I met you. No, it was right after I met you. But anyway, brought up this point. Do Reavers breed?
Not well. And probably not, and definitely not well.
They have a tendency to kill anyone they have sex with.
And true. Although they do,
it's a very extreme form of birth control.
Yeah, and they do make mention in Firefly, though, of the fact that there are parts of the Reaver psychosis that are in effect contagious.
Well, and as we discover,
there may actually
be a plausible reason for that.
Exactly. So they don't breed as such, but they do, increase their numbers.
Fair enough. But then, my note on Jane cuddling Vera. Then they land on Miranda, and do yourself a favor, if you're watching this in a dark room, just before the Miranda scene, pause it, go stare at a light for a minute, and then come back and watch the movie. Because this is going to hurt your eyes.
Oh, yeah.
It was so over-filtrated. It
gets really bright,
Well, not only that, I had forgotten when I was rewatching is how dark this movie is. I mean, not in tone, but lighting-wise.
Yeah, the actual.
It's a very dark movie.
And
there was a couple of times where because I was watching it on my MacBook, and I actually went and started adjusting the screen to see if maybe I had it at a bad tilt. But no, it's just a very, very dark movie.
And that was actually a style choice that Joss chose early on in Firefly, because he wanted the future to seem dirty and gritty, and part of that was low lighting.
Well, he wanted the parts of it that we were spending most of our time in to be, and in contrast to the bright, shiny, futuristic, version of the core worlds.
Right.
But they get on Miranda, and you find out everybody died. And they just laid down. Nobody knows why. Let's get to the beacon. Did anybody feel like this scene kind of drew out a little bit?
It was a little long.
Yeah.
A little bit. Not terribly, but just enough that you noticed.
Yeah. But they get to the beacon, and I want to know who this girl is. I did not find her on IMDb, and that was partially because I just gave up. But the chick that actually is the beacon that they're talking to, the hologram, she looks so familiar.
I noticed that too this time.
Uh-huh.
It's like, I know her. Where do I know her from?
But anyway, you find out about that, and you find out that they not only killed everybody on this planet, but they made the Reavers.
Mm-hmm. Right. And there's a slight continuity issue here.
Mm-hmm.
That and they bring it up. Jane brings it up during his whole Reaver spiel.
Mm-hmm.
on Serenity, but it seemed in Firefly like the Reavers had been around a lot longer than 10 years.
Yeah.
And although they make reference twice to the fact that it was 10 years ago that this happened, and that the Reavers started showing up in the Rim. But it just seemed in Firefly like they'd been around longer than that.
Yeah, because, honestly, the Reavers had been around long enough for people to start doubting they actually existed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, those are just, stories you tell your children to scare them.
Yeah, and, that could be, the thought of people who hadn't yet encountered them, so they could be new. But it just seemed like, it seemed like one of those things that, the pilots had come into contact with throughout several years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And is it weird how, seeing this hologram and then River throws up and then it's like a switch just gets flicked and she's better?
I noticed that too. It's like, that doesn't work quite like that.
Yeah.
Well, neither does actually going in and slicing people's brains apart to create psychic receivers. So, there's a certain, the idea seemed to be that the thing that was being buried under all of that psychosis
mm-hmm.
had now come to surface.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, all of the mechanisms that were put there to keep it hidden in her brain, were out. That's probably the least problematic part of the science of this whole section.
Which, by the way, all of the you're led to the assumption that all of this psychosis was River's psychosis was caused by her having picked this information up out of a parliament member's brain
mm-hmm.
by accident. But all the scientists are under the assumption that what they've done to her has actually caused her psychosis.
Mm-hmm.
So you're left with two conflicting theories about what's wrong with River.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And,
you don't actually ever get a really good idea of why this information's in her brain. She might have picked it up from the parliament members. We don't know.
That's the theory that you're led to believe by the operatives. Conversation with the technician.
Well, he basically, that's why he said you're an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
But not necessarily that was the specific vector.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really ever explained. Let's just
yeah.
Yeah. Rob, you reminded me of one of my favorite. My
first guess as to what's wrong with River is a lot.
Yeah, you reminded me of one of my favorite lines from the Firefly TV show where Wash says, she's a psychic. That sounds like something out of science fiction. Zoe says,
"You live on a spaceship,
honey." He says, "So." Yeah. But anyways, so they leave Miranda, and I love the way that they bait the Reavers into the fight with the Alliance.
Oh, no. Before this, you have to make mention of the fact that this is where Mal finally says what became the rallying cry for the entire Browncoat Nation. Mm-hmm. I aim to misbehave.
Yeah. But I was going to say something before you interrupted that.
About how they baited the Reavers. Yeah,
I like the way that this worked because, and there's a line in another show, I can't remember what it was that right now, that I really marked down, but when Godzilla and Mothra are going to go at each other's throats, then the best thing to do is just stay out of the way.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
And I like that. I like the way that this works, When you're fighting somebody bigger, we'll go get the bigger, bully to come get him.
Exactly.
And this is the moment where we finally see the operative lose his crap. For just a moment.
Target everyone, somebody, fire!
Yeah.
Before that, though, you have this, we went and looked this up earlier, Carl and I were talking about it on IMDb, but this was an old World War II cannon mounted on top of Serenity.
Yes, it was.
And that was able to damage that spaceship.
And I have a problem, I have a slight issue here, and it may just be, you know, something that's, you know, they kind of gloss over in the speed, but you see Mal in his spacesuit firing this gun.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go, they make the jump, and then he's back inside the ship. Now, is he actually outside the ship for the jump?
That's unclear. I don't think it is unclear.
Remember,
there's a top hatch, so he may have just had, you know, popped up like a gopher to fire this shot. And then dropped back down inside.
That's true.
And cannon was not far from where the hatch was, if you remember right, from the Objects in Space episode.
That's true. It was put right there by the hatch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then you have, you know, Wash's amazingly fancy flying.
I'm a leaf on the wind.
Which we referenced in our Night's Tale episode.
Just put us on the ground. That's definitely going to happen.
That part will happen pretty definitely.
I do love the way that the Reavers go into combat with the Alliance. Like, I love their attacks.
Yeah.
And it's very telling of the Reavers' personality.
Yeah.
Just ram into them
or shoot them.
Yeah, or hook them and swing them around. And, you know, the EMP cannon was probably the most advanced technology they had.
Mm-hmm. Which I will point out that, you know, Serenity gets hit by an EMP cannon or an EMP wave, knocks out all of the electronics on the ship, right? Mal grabs the intercom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, there it is. But they go into the tailspin, which was something Joss really wanted in this movie. He wanted to see Serenity in a tailspin for some reason. I do like the fact that Jane was not yet seated when they go into the tailspin.
Yeah. That's why he wanted the tailspin. He just wanted to throw Adam Baldwin around the room.
But then you have the landing, and, you know, any landing you can walk away from. Whoops.
Oh.
And now we get to this point. All right. Now,
okay,
this upset.
What was it that he actually hit Wash?
It was one of the Reaver's bolts.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it was the big giant harpoon cannons they kept firing, and they're big enough to, you know, basically spear ships and tow them. So, that's going to leave a mark.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people were upset because Wash was a beloved character,
mm-hmm.
Many people's favorite character, and
I did not like the fact they killed him.
But here's why Wash had to die. From a dramatic point of view. Mm-hmm. All right. Joss is known for killing off characters. You know that, mm-hmm. you know, that's something he does.
Mm-hmm.
And when he killed Book, you went, okay, Joss killed a character. Way you go, Joss. You know, you did got your quota. But when Wash dies, you know, for the rest of the movie, all bets are off. You cannot be sure who's going to live and who's going to die because of that death.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Joss could have pulled a Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid and had no one walk away. He could have done that. It would have been an unsatisfying ending. But you cannot be sure that any given character in that final climatic battle is going to walk away.
Yeah.
And that is why Wash had to die, because somebody, you know, if it wasn't Wash, one of the others would have to. Because that's what makes the stakes real in that final battle. You can't go, oh, they're the heroes. Of course they're going to triumph.
Right.
So from a dramatic point of view, it's kind of like, you know, you set the shot with Book, you spike it with Wash, and from that point on, you are on the edge of your seat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I literally jumped out of my seat in the theater.
I can see that.
Yeah.
I was surprised. I had managed to avoid this spoiler.
Mm-hmm.
All the way up to the movie, and when it happened, I literally jumped to my feet.
Fair enough.
Yeah. And
but it does set the whole next sequence, the whole up to the end, where you know you really don't know, and you have real tension that you wouldn't feel if he hadn't.
That's a good point. I will say that the way that he killed the way that he killed Wash was pure Joss.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
cutting him off in mid line like that is pure Joss.
Yeah,
and I'll agree with you that when it comes to killing beloved cast members, Joss Whedon might as well be the guy who writes Game of Thrones.
Oh yeah,
whose name is escaping me at the moment.
Not even George
R. R. Martin, for example, how many times did he kill Angel?
Not only that, but think about this for a minute. You know, you've got a Whedonverse. Now, what is the number one rule in the Whedonverse? Happiness is punished.
Yep.
Yeah. Wash was in marital bliss, would have gone on to live a very happy life with many fat children after this. Mm-hmm. That must be punished.
Yep.
I know that sounds terrible, but that is how Whedon works.
Yeah.
Well, it was suggested that had Alan Tudyk been able to sign that contract, that he would have lived through the movie.
Yeah.
But I really do think that the death does serve a dramatic purpose. It's not gratuitous.
No.
It really does spike the shot. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's something I really like in the Serenity and Firefly universe, as opposed to Whedon's other universes, you know, the Buffy and Angel, is that when someone dies, they're dead.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have people dying and coming back so much in the other shows that it really takes away from the dramatic feel to their death.
Yeah, I was just glad that they never brought Buffy back after they killed her, because that would have really ruined the show.
Which time?
You know, if they'd had a sixth season, or God forbid a seventh season of Buffy, I think really ruined it.
Or a second season, since, you know, they killed her the first time.
Hell, it would be almost like throwing a whole bunch of Slayers in there.
Oh,
but you know what? I can't complain about the seventh season of Buffy or the Slayerettes or anything like that. Because let's face simple facts. Had that not have happened, we would not have Miss Felicia Day.
Ooh.
And, you know, I can't contemplate a universe without Felicia Day.
I can't either.
But honestly, you know, as far as I'm concerned, Buffy ends at the end of season 5.
I can tell you, honestly, in a universe without Felicia Day, my spank bank would be about half the size.
I did not need to know that.
I didn't even finish that, because I didn't need to know it either.
I can stand to hear a little more.
Thank you.
Yes!
Thank you so much, Rob. Thank you.
Now sitting open going, I can't.
See, and that is the point where Rob just secured his place for a future guest host spot on Movies in the Buff.
This time, Rob, I promise we'll actually let you pick the movie.
Yeah.
This was great. I'm actually glad, because I had not rewatched Serenity since I saw it in theater.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I have very complex feelings about Serenity as a whole, and we get to that when we sum up. But, but I did enjoy it a lot more this time through, knowing what I was coming in for than I did the first time I saw it. Not to say that I didn't enjoy it the first time, but as I said, I have very complex feelings about the film as a whole and what it represents for the Firefly universe.
But just to move along here, as we get on into the Remember the Alamo and River Goes Helpless scenes.
Yeah.
I did like the way that they did this fight, this gunfight. What I did not like about it was once they got backed up into the, you know, into the vault, it was like it just ended. You know what I mean? You still got the enemy out there, but we're just going to stop now.
Well, they didn't actually do that, because they did give shots of River fighting.
Well, yeah, later on.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I actually wondered whether the scene would have been more effective if you didn't get to see River actually fight. Whether you know, if it just, you know, the doors had opened and there she was standing on a pile of corpses.
Yeah. I will say that this is, in my view, the prettiest set of cinematography, though, her fight scene. And actually, I was looking at the trivia, and not only, you know, does it mention her using her dance background for the fight sequences here, but the cameraman that filmed this was actually also a dancer, and he's actually walking the camera around in an empty space between her and the rest of the Reavers to film this.
Yeah.
And he's literally dancing around her while she's doing her fight scene to film it, and it came out awesome.
Yeah, it's a beautiful piece of fight cinematography, no doubt.
But while this is going on, you have Mal gets his information from the Lovebot and moves on, which I kind of liked the Lovebot idea, then I kind of didn't at the same time.
It's just taking a real doll to its logical conclusion.
Yeah, that's true.
And
well, here's what I liked about the Lovebot. She repeated the message when the operative showed up. If she hadn't done that, I'd have been like, okay, is this thing really sophisticated enough to recognize Mal and only give the message to Mal? Right. No, of course not. He was dying from a sword wound, and he had literally moments to relay the message. It's just going to play for anybody who walks in.
But right. Here's the thing. Obviously, it works on some kind of a motion sensor system of somebody walking directly in front of her. And what bothered me about this scene was, you know, the operative, for some reason, goes all the way around everybody and drops down in through this, like, ventilation shaft or something that just happens to be right next to the Lovebot, so he can just happen to walk right in front of her to get the same message. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, but there's a point. Are you familiar with Belisario's Law?
No, I guess I missed that one.
Don Belisario was the creator of many iconic TV shows, and one of the TV shows he created was Quantum Leap.
Yeah.
And whenever someone would ask him, to explain some point of order of how exactly the Quantum Leap universe worked, he would say, "Don't examine this too closely."
Yeah.
So this is one of these things where You need the operative to know where Mal's going. There's no reason for the operative to go where Mal is unless he gets the message. So you have to have a way for him to get that bit of intelligence.
Right.
Otherwise,
and technically, you
could. Otherwise, Mal goes downstairs, he broadcasts the message and walks out, and this is the end of the movie. And you don't have the final confrontation.
Yeah.
But, Rod, if you need a logic reason why, the Reavers are in the main area. He had to have a way to go around them without fighting the Reavers.
Truthfully, to get the information off of Mal.
Truthfully, if you were going to follow this to its logical conclusion, after the operative crash lands in his escape pod at Mr. Universe's doorstep, the Reavers would have raped him and killed him. But that would be the logical conclusion.
Well, we don't know actually where he landed. He may not have been on,
that's possibly true.
Their side of his doorstep.
But then you have the stun gun to the back, and finally a quick draw, and Mal versus operative round two fight. And
of course, that's not exactly plan A.
Yes,
I love the quick draw. Okay, now just for the record, you know how we were discussing in the last episode in The Punisher how the quick draw just doesn't work in this movie. This is the way the quick draw works.
Yeah, with the gun already holstered.
Yeah.
Right. But
you don't holster the gun to draw it again.
Yeah.
No, if it's already out, use it, then holster it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't make
sense.
Even
the blonde knows that.
Yeah. And then you have Mal and the operative in some kind of weird American Gladiator situation over this huge pit.
How the hell do I get over there?
Whoever wrote this episode should die.
Wait. You know what this brings me back to, though? It gives me flashbacks to a Firefly episode. No, this is something the captain has to take care of himself.
No, it isn't.
No, he doesn't.
Oh, okay.
Okay. When Zoe gets injured in the shootout, did anybody else think, why is he pouring caulk in her wound?
Oh,
this is futuristic.
Yeah, I did notice that.
It's Insta-bandage.
Mm-hmm. It's cost.
Zoe did ask for just a bandage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It is. It is. You know, it is caulk or a similar type substance, but it is supposed to be like a foam, like one of those spray foam bandages.
I get it. It's like a Demolition Man in that protective foam car thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing is, actually, that technology exists.
Oh, I know.
I mean, this is a more advanced version of it mm-hmm. because, you know, liquid bandages don't work on wounds of that magnitude.
No.
Right.
But liquid bandages totally exist. It's basically nail polish remover, for crying out loud.
Well, what I do, you know, if I cut my finger, if I cut my finger, I throw a little super glue on it, but that doesn't mean, you know, it's a standard medicine. You know what I mean?
Right.
But in this case, you know, you're under the assumption that it is some kind of, you know, foaming bonding agent to bind the wound together mixed with chemicals to help it close.
Yeah, I guess so.
Hey, it's faster than stitches.
But then you get Doc Tam's first kill ever. I love the fact that he finally kills somebody. And he gets shot after they get back into the vault. And it's
over. With this, I'm going to live.
Yeah, exactly.
And then she gets shot. Everybody gets shot.
Everybody gets shot. And again, like I said, you couldn't be sure.
Yeah, that's true.
Every time one of those people took a wound, you're like, ooh, are they going to make it? Are they? Did we just lose that one?
Yeah.
You said that everybody got shot.
Except for
Jane.
When
did Jane get shot?
Yeah, Jane didn't get shot. That's true.
No, Jane.
Oh, no, he did. He took it in the shoulder.
Yeah, he took one to the shoulder, and Nara doesn't get shot.
And Nara doesn't. Right. That's one of them.
She is
She's
trying.
She's not stupid enough to stand up either.
True.
No, she did not get shot because she is so very, very pretty.
Oh, God, yes. She's too pretty to die.
Here, just so you know. Anyway, then you have River's turn, and she, you know, dives through the door and does all of her cool choreography that is just awesome that we discussed earlier. And we go back to. Go ahead.
I find it interesting that, you know, she completely loses. She's completely lost her shit at this point, you know, throughout this whole scene with the fight. And, you know, she's not able to, you know, trigger the weapon side of her personality until Simon gets shot and is dying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My turn.
Yeah. She's like, my turn, and goes through the door.
But, you know, they go back to Mal and the operative. And I just have to say, screwdriver against a sword, obviously it ain't the size that matters.
am I mistaken, or is this actually a throwback to another Firefly scene with Mal and some kind of edged weapon? Because it seems like I've seen that scene before in Firefly.
Wasn't it in the train job when he comes up against Crow?
It could be.
At some point.
Yeah, and he reaches for something, and it's not nearly as impressive.
That may be.
That may have,
but he still won.
Might have been. But he, yeah. Well, yeah, because Jane shot him. Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Was aiming for his head.
But anyway, then you have, you know, Mal obviously does the nerve cluster fake out for the win. And this move that he uses to dislocate the operative's shoulders, I know for a fact actually works, just for the record. that will dislocate
keep that
shoulders.
In mind if we ever meet.
What about the way he broke the operative's back?
He didn't break his back.
He didn't break his back.
That's a nerve cluster.
He dislocated his shoulders, yeah.
Yeah.
The crack you hear is both his shoulders dislocating backwards.
Yeah.
Okay, because... He could not move. That's why I thought
that
he
was
broke
the,
his back.
I think he pulled the same nerve punch that the operative tried to pull on him.
But then you have, you know, Mal wins. Friendship.
Yeah.
I'm going
so
to
there,
do it.
There is a lovely moment here. My wife actually pointed this out, and I hadn't really thought about it. But you have this wonderful moment here as Mal does the broadcast of the operative helpless and silent, juxtaposed with River's fight choreography.
Mm-hmm.
And they cut back and forth between them.
And you also have, you know, Mal puts it very succinctly. He's going to do him a favor and show him a world without sin. Mm-hmm. And you actually see the operative crying.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because for the first time, he actually knows why it was they were chasing River. and what it's all been about, and it actually breaks his conditioning.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he said earlier in the movie he didn't know what it was, and he didn't care. It wasn't the point.
And the it makes very clear the point that the reason he didn't care was because he didn't know.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't his place to ask.
And all I have to say after this whole scene is over, as beautiful as it was, really? Now there's a bridge?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, really. But, you know.
Well, and you know, Mr. Universe is such a techno geek that he probably had it set, you know, as a remote control trigger from the far side that, you know, they just didn't have. But, you know, on the near side, it's just a push button.
But you know, you obviously see the problem that exists here, very similar to the problem that exists in the Star Wars universe, which is no matter how powerful that galactic despotic government is, OSHA only goes so far out into the universe.
Yeah, fair enough.
And now we get to the sexiest thing to ever be on the big screen, and that is those doors opening and River standing there.
Oh, God.
That is, I think that has to be the sexiest thing to ever be on the big screen.
Seriously, if Summer Glau would just, you know, give me one night, I would give her anything she ever wanted. I'm just saying.
But, so noted.
Yeah. Oh, man, I am in love with this girl. But anyway, mainly because she's a tiny girl who can whoop my ass.
Exactly.
Which is what you've been looking for all this time.
Actually, it is. You said this multiple occasions. The only problem, the only thing that keeps Summer Glau from being Rod's perfect woman is that he's often stipulated that she be blonde.
Yes. Yeah, I'm into blondes. I don't know. But still, I would make
Rod,
an exception.
You're just strange.
But anyway, after, you know, all of this goes down, you have the endings. And I just want to say right now, Peter Jackson, this is the way you do multiple endings.
Yeah, end a movie and then end a movie and then end a movie. Yeah.
Yeah, but you do it quickly and you get to the point. You don't sit there and play it out forever. I mean, seriously, an hour and a half worth of fucking endings? Kiss my ass. I'm not watching.
That's how Return of the King was written. It's 500 pages worth of ending.
Yeah, actually, believe it or not, Peter Jackson cut.
Yeah.
Some of the endings.
Yeah. Like half of them.
And could have done so more.
Oh yeah.
Sure, but don't blame it on Peter Jackson, is what we're trying to say.
Yeah, blame
it on Tolkien, because honestly, that thing goes on and on and on. And Return of the King is the shortest of the three books.
And you ever have to argue with me about blaming something on Tolkien, trust me.
And the interesting thing about Lord of the Rings is, in paperback, all three books are the same, or roughly the same size. Uh-huh. However, half of Return of the King is appendixes.
Uh-huh. Yes.
But 3/4 of the story of Return of the King are endings.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like the whole climax of the story is in the first quarter of the book.
Yeah. And then everything else is wrapping up.
But you know, you get to the funeral scene here.
Yes.
And you find out all their names, you see the thing go off. You get the operative's goodbye. You know, if I ever see you again, I'll kill you. Which I loved.
Yeah, and Zoe finally gets to wear a slinky dress.
Yeah,
that's true. That is true.
Captain,
would you like a slinky dress? Can I buy a slinky dress? She finally gets to wear a slinky dress.
Hell, I'll help out.
And who, you know, I don't know if any of you guys, I know Rob can remember back to the first time he watched this, but I had this thought watching it this time. When you were watching it the first time, did you ever get, for a split second, the impression that Mal might actually invite the operative to join the crew?
For a very split second moment, there was this sort of like, but you know, Josh loves to play with those kind of expectations.
Yeah.
In the train job, the moment I fell in love with Firefly, I was enjoying Firefly all through that first hour that we were watching the train job. The moment I fell in love with the show was when they've got Crow. And like, this is all the money your boss gave us. We're giving it back. We don't have anything with him, anything with us. And Crow gets up and he gives this, you know, you think you're getting away with this. You keep the money. Use it to buy a funeral because I will chase you down and the last thing you ever see will be my blade. And, you know, they're setting up this is the guy who's going to hound them and keep showing up to foil all their plots and be in their way and underfoot. And they'll always have to be trying to stay one step ahead of him. And Mal kicks him through the engine.
Yeah, exactly.
And I went, oh my God, I love this show.
Yep.
And you know, the next guy, they pull him down. This is the money we boss gave. I got it. It's fine.
Okay, so anyway, we're going to cut this short because I got to go watch Firefly now. So see y'all later. Anyways.
I'll be in my pump.
Yeah.
Wow, it's been said on almost every episode of this podcast, and Rod didn't say it this time.
I know.
But, Rod uses that line every time there's a hot chick in a movie.
Yep.
But
that's four.
And I, you know,
I'll be honest with you. I would not kick any of the ladies.
Crew
out of bed for eating crackers, and possibly not a couple of the men. But
in absolute seriousness, I would not kick any of the women out of bed for slaughtering goats.
There's some truth to that. I think out of all of them, I am most attracted to Kaylee.
Oh, yeah.
With River as a close second and Inara right behind them.
Zoe, I would put Zoe ahead of Inara, actually. Have you ever been with a warrior woman?
Yes, I have. Just for the record.
But
definitely her legs and the small of her back and that whole area where those two meet. That whole area.
Okay, Rob is officially washed now.
But anyway,
you know, it's one of those things where I look at it and it's like, you know I want to be male, but I know I'm Wash.
Yeah. Nobody's
Mal. And Rod knows he wants to be Mal, but he's Jane.
Jane.
Mm-hmm.
I am, because I would have the grenades.
And I really want to be Mal, but I'm probably Simon.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You are.
Yeah.
Okay, well, there you go.
Okay, so...
Hey, but I've got the really hot sister.
Jane and River. Sorry. Anyway.
No.
I've read that fic, and it's really nothing you want to go there.
Okay, I'm not even going to place myself in that, because I know I'm not any of them.
I'd go with Kaylee.
Yeah, you'd be Kaylee.
Yeah. Anyways, but you find out River's a new pilot.
You just want me to be Kaylee because you're already Simon.
No, I want you to be Kaylee because it's that's the only character that fits you closest.
But
although I'm now curious to see, you know, what Lisa could actually do with a socket wrench.
I can only say one simple little thing to that. Giggity.
Yeah, I knew it was.
Oh. Anyways.
One simple thing to that, too.
Mm-hmm.
Shiny.
That wraps up our round table. We'll move on to quotes. Rob, would you like to get us started with your favorite quote?
Oh, wow. There are so many great quotes in this.
Are there?
No.
And we've already done most of them. Well, one of the more serious ones was Book's final words. I don't care what you believe in, just believe in something.
Mm-hmm.
I love that quote.
That is a good quote.
And the way that actually, again, is foreshadowing.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the final scene with him and the operative, you know, do you believe in this? Are you prepared to die for it? Yes, I am.
That ain't exactly plan A.
That ain't exactly plan A. But you know, it does mirror that scene with Book. So I'll go with that for starters.
Okay, Lisa.
The hell with this! I'm gonna live.
Carl.
You know I always look to you for counsel, Shepard, but sermons make me sleepy. Sorry, I have to continue my run of slightly blasphemous lines.
Man, it's been going on for too long now. See, I'm just so glad that we do this over Skype so that I'm not near him when he gets hit by lightning.
But, I'm the closest one to him, and I think I'm still far enough away that the lightning will miss me.
And I'm going to do this the best I can here, but this is my buff quote. Ain't logical. Cutting on his own face, raping and murdering. Hell, I'll kill a man in a fair fight. Or if I think he's going to start a fair fight. Or if he bothers me. Or if there's a woman. Or if I'm getting paid. Mostly only when I'm getting paid. But these Reavers, last 10 years, show up like the boogeyman out of stories, eating people alive. Where's that get fun?
And that so sums up Rod, too.
It really does. So how
did that was actually a really good Jane impression.
Thank you.
That's
you.
One of your better ones.
Yeah.
There's a line that's actually from the movie, and I always remember it as being from Ariel, but it's actually from the movie, where he says, "This is exactly what I didn't want. I wanted simple. I wanted in and out. I wanted easy money."
I remember that.
Of course, what you plan and...
What happened ain't exactly ever been similar.
Similar, yeah.
They were discussing grenades.
Mm-hmm. Are those grenades? Yeah, Captain don't want them.
Captain don't want them. Yeah. It sure would be nice to have some grenades.
Grenades about now.
There's another great Jane line. Mm. I won't get it. If they get me, you shoot me. Well, go shoot me first.
Yeah, but that line doesn't work without the visual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, moving on to best buffed. Rob, would you like to start us off or?
Go ahead.
Okay. Lisa, do you want to go ahead?
Yeah, I'm going to have to go with the best award for Crazy Depression.
You know, there was a band made up of a bunch of high schoolers back when from my high school when I was going. Called Divine Melancholia, and that's what really to me sums up River's character in the movie. But okay, go ahead. Any others?
I had another one, but I can't remember what it is.
Fair
so enough. I guess not.
Carl,
this is why you have to write things down.
Yeah.
This is getting the Varsity Blues Tweeter Award for best one-liners.
There you go.
Yeah, I'll have to agree with that one.
Fair enough. Any others?
No, I think that that and the ones you've already got, I'm not even going to step on your toes. But,
you know,
if we find another movie with better one-liners than this, I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, I agree. Okay. Rob, you got anything? Or you want me to go ahead?
Definitely going to give this the best They Did What award for a killing wash at the moment they did.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, I'll agree to that one, too.
Yes.
That is a good one. Okay. Any others?
No, I got nothing.
Okay, fair enough. Well, I gave Summer Glau and if y'all will remember our Heather's episode, gave her the Crazy Christian Award because she does crazy better than Christian Slater, which is saying something.
Oh, yes, it is.
It is. You know, and I've been debating on this. I'm going to let my other buffers and our guest host decide if I should go here or not. I've been debating on whether or not this should get the Chaucer Award.
The Chaucer Award? Oh, for best character introduction?
For best writing.
Or for best writing. Ooh.
Yeah. Because this was really an extremely well-written movie. But at the same time, I take points away because of the fact that they did depend a little bit on their previous, you know, television show.
For yeah. Their I mean, the dialogue is exceptional.
The dialogue's amazing. Mm-hmm.
So I'll definitely give it, I don't know, a Mammoth Award. But
And the concept is really good, but it was technically previously done by the TV show.
We'll see. The Knights movie, they didn't have a TV show to base on.
No, but they did have Chaucer's Canterbury Tales.
Mm.
So.
Which were very loosely based.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's a toss-up.
Yeah.
And it's got something to do with Alan Tudyk being in both of them.
Yeah. Given that there is some conflict about that, I will be rescinding the Chaucer Award for this movie, but I still have the Crazy Christian.
Yeah, I would definitely put it up there right next to, you know, A Knight's Tale for the writing. They're right there. And
you know what?
Again, I think it's because Alan Tudyk doesn't do bad movies.
That's true. You know what? I've got a solution for this. They're going to get the Chaucer Award runner up.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so
we can agree to that.
Moving on to Were You Playing With Your Willy? See, I've been starting Rob on everything. Let's start Lisa off this time, since I always tend to skip her.
Yes, you do.
Well, so does Carl occasionally.
So what was Mal's date of birth?
No, September 20th, 2468.
Rob?
Hold on, I'm looking it up.
No.
Hey, that was never against the rules, and I saw it. 2468.
Yep. I actually was going to use that. And then I saw it in the trivia and said, nope, I'm not using it. I got to pull something else.
Yeah, it was like the first one in the trivia, at least.
Okay. I didn't see the trivia, so yeah, you're out of luck.
I know.
My next question is, Simon says that Kaylee needed a shot. What type of shot was it?
Ooh.
Oh, it had like seven syllables.
I know. But I don't remember what it was.
He needed
it. It was the Quattro Triticale.
Yeah.
It was a different show.
He called it only one word later, right after he got shot.
Yeah.
No, he says adrenaline for me and something for her.
Coradin?
Something like that. Yeah. Coronin?
Cortisone?
I can tell you the spelling. I don't know how to pronounce it.
Okay.
C-A-P-H-E-R.
Kafer. Mm. Or Kafer. That was it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Fair enough. Okay, Carl.
Now, we want to do the audience questions?
No, we'll do those all at once at the end.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. This is going to be easy, so I'm just wondering who's going to jump in on it first. Mm-hmm. What engine does Kaylee say will fall right out of the sky?
Caperson 48.
Ooh, close.
38.
Still close.
Oh.
Rob, you got average. Anything?
I'm trying to remember. I am trying to remember.
I'm trying to remember why they called it that. There was actually a reason behind it.
Because it falls right out of the sky.
No, it was actually a reference to something in Joss Whedon's previous life.
Those things are...
Wow.
Was the Capucin 38?
There it is. You put an R in it, Rod.
Ah, that was just my
accent. I didn't know how to pronounce that C one.
Yeah, Capucin 38 engine. Okay, and... This is the one that I teased earlier. How long after the Firefly pilot does this movie take place?
Which pilot?
The actual two-part pilot where River and Simon first get introduced.
1.5 years. I'm guessing.
I don't know.
8 months.
I was going to say 8 months, and I was like, no, that's too easy.
Mal actually says to Simon, or Simon says to Mal something to the effect of, they've been on board ship for 8 months. And that's when that happens as the pilot.
It's true.
Which, again, seems like an awful short time.
Yeah, that's one of the bigger problems with the timeline of this series, or this movie, is that it's really hard to place it where it's being placed in the timeline.
Exactly, because so much has happened in what seems like such a short amount of time since the end of the show. Although you could go under the assumption that everything in the show happened in a like 2 or 3 month period. And it still gives you 5 months for everything else to go haywire.
True.
Mm-hmm.
So what's our score now?
I have one.
Rob has one.
And
Lisa.
I have none, zero.
Yep.
Neither do I. Okay, Rob, do you have some questions for us?
I'm not prepared. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I will go ahead and ask mine. I have, in the opening shot of Earth, how many spaceships were leaving?
Three.
Lisa?
I'm going to guess and say four. I don't actually know.
Close. Five. And I actually had to pause this and count them. There were two just around the border.
And you forgot to ask Rob.
Oh, I'm sorry, Rob.
I didn't know.
Okay.
Hey, at least
I'm
honest.
Not used to it. Yeah, I wouldn't use it. Okay, you know what? What was the name of the bar where they met Fanti and Mingo?
Wow. There's only been one other time the name of a bar has been said.
It was Rick's. It was definitely Rick's.
Okay.
It should have been Everybody Goes to Rick's.
Everybody Goes to Rick's.
Well, that's only because that's where everybody... Oh, wait. Never mind.
No, that's a callback to a classic movie that is too old for you two.
Hey. Name of the bar.
Okay, I don't know the answer to the question, but I did want to make a connection. Mm-hmm. The last time we had a guest star, there was also, what was the name of the bar?
Was there?
Yeah, and it was your question.
Was it mine? Yeah. Well, okay, so the Irishman makes the bar questions. Is anybody shocked here?
No.
Seriously, I'm on my third year in this episode.
Let's see. I can't remember them ever showing or saying a name.
They said it.
I have no idea.
Everybody give up? Okay, the Maidenhead.
Oh, yeah, I do recall that. Okay.
It was the Maidenhead. Okay, so...
I was wrong. This is my kind of party.
You know what I think it should have been called? Instead of the Maidenhead? Oh, crap, that joke would have worked a lot better if I could remember her stupid name. Marie Antoinette. Anyway, can't help it. I loved Marie Antoinette. She gave the ultimate head.
You know, that joke is funny the first time you hear Robin Williams say it.
Yeah.
Not the fifth time I hear you say it.
Well, you know, I just love that joke so much. Anyway, mental
health.
Ask the audience time.
Oh, ask the audience. Thank you. Lisa.
What award did Mal receive in the war?
That's a good one.
That's a good one. I remember that one, though. Yeah. Okay, Carl?
What does River use to take out Jane in the bar?
Okay. Rob, would you like to come up with a question?
For the audience?
For the audience. As long as you don't ask, you know, which one of them are single. I've already done that joke.
what language does Simon use to put River to sleep?
Ooh, that is a good one.
It is.
That's a very good one. I think I heard Rod and Carl discussing that.
Yeah.
Okay. In reference with my question about the bar, what is the name of the planet where they spoke to Fanti and Mingo?
Ooh.
And you can always email your answers to these questions to inthebufffilms@gmail.com. And any answers will get their names mentioned on our show. And possibly, given the proper equipment, even get a Skype call in mid-show.
Hey.
I just thought that would be a good idea.
Hey, you got to keep upping the game until we start getting email, right?
No kidding. Okay. Since we have no new 5-star reviews, we're going to go with mental debuff. Rob, would you like to start us off?
All right, this is where we
just recap.
Discuss. Sum it up.
Yeah.
This was a really, really good movie that I really, really enjoyed. Except that it also simultaneously represents the potential of what Firefly could have become, and there's no way for me to divorce it in my head. It compresses 30 hours of intended plot line into a 90-minute movie and suffers badly from that and from the way they had to reset things to make them work in a movie. Having said that, it gives you a bit of an ending, and it's definitely a worthwhile thing to watch if you're a Firefly fan.
Okay, in all seriousness, all we have to do is add a punchline onto the end of that, and we have a whole new segment, Rob's Rants. I like
it. Oh, was I supposed to be funny? I'm sorry.
Hey, it works.
It works either way. Lisa, it's your turn.
I agree with Rob on this one. You cannot divorce Firefly from Serenity. To me, they were just about the same, but there was enough similarity or enough differences that you could just call it a movie. I was one of the few people who watched Serenity first and then Firefly.
Uh-huh.
But was able to keep up with it. I enjoyed watching it again, and I will probably watch it another time later. Not tonight, but later.
Fair enough.
But yes, I do recommend you guys go watch it.
Carl?
There you go. Now it's Carl's turn.
Oh, man. I'm going to continue a theme here. This is the best movie I've ever seen that I wish had never been made.
Mm-hmm.
Because in order to make this, or in order for this movie to exist, Fox had to be stupid and cancel Firefly. And that is, you know, a cause for which there is no good effect. regardless of how good Serenity is and how awesome and epic this movie is, the continuation of Firefly, it would have been so much better.
Yeah.
And so much better suited to the story than this turned, than this ever could have been. And Joss is still God, in my opinion. He does no wrong. He does only as much right as he is given the tools to do so.
With exception of Aliens.
He had nothing to do with any of the Aliens movies. You speak blasphemy, sir.
Anyways.
Well, you know, it's worth remembering that the only reason that Buffy the Vampire Slayer is a TV series is because they so completely butchered the script he wrote for the movie. And when they gave him an opportunity to do it again with more creative control, he jumped on it.
Oh, yeah.
Seriously, can you imagine what goes through that guy's head after he writes this script and they say, oh, one of the vampires is going to be played by Pee Wee Herman? What would you think? Anyway,
And he is one of the biggest reasons I am looking forward to seeing the Avengers. I mean, I'm a moderate comic book fan, and I'm a moderate Marvel fan, but this, I cannot wait to see what he does with his hands on the Avengers with as much creative control as he now insists on doing for everything.
Oh, here where I'm living at, they're doing, and I'm sorry, I just felt the need to mention this right now, they're doing a kind of impromptu-style JossCon for the opening of Cabin at the Lake out at the theater. Yeah, and like they're actually inviting local businesses and stuff to come out and do booths, like movie businesses and stuff like that. Had y'all lived a little closer and we could actually get this going, I would have had a Movies in the Buff booth out there.
Mm. That would be fun, because I really do want to see Cabin at the Lake.
Oh, I do too. But I'm sorry, I just felt the need to say that one. Well, fair enough, Carl. The only thing I can say to your, you know, mental debuff is, can I get an amen?
No, but you can get an entire, but you can get a awesome cast for every geek production ever made since Joss started acting, or since Joss started directing.
That's true.
Because I swear to God, how many geek film and TV stars has he discovered? Nathan Fillion, Jewel State, Summer Glau. Do I need to go on? Felicia Day. I mean, he even really created. He really, you know, made. Sarah Michelle Gellar, you know, for as you know, and for all the arguments we could have about whether or not that actually should have happened.
I hear her new show's going great, though.
Oh, it is. It's awesome.
I haven't seen it yet, but I hear it's going really good.
It's really, really good. And getting to see her play two identical twins with completely separate personalities is awesome.
That's interesting.
You know, Joss would be my master if only because he introduced me to the two great screen loves of my life, Allison Hannigan and Jewel State.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For that alone.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway.
And those two ladies need to call me just while we're putting this out in the universe.
Rob, here's a line for you from Buffy. Bored now.
Her favorite Willow line ever.
So, does anybody know what time it is?
It's time for Rod's Rants.
It's time for Rod's Rants.
Which so needs its own jingle.
It really does. Okay. All the buffers out there know I get turned on by three things. Cute, tiny women who could kick my ass, near-death situations, and good movies. Keeping that in mind, I have to say, it's very hard for me to watch Serenity. Only because all the blood flows to my dick and I pass out every 15 minutes. It's damned inconvenient, Joss. Mal Reynolds is the perfect scoundrel hero. His crew are amazing, and the women had me humping every inanimate object in my living room.
I so did not need to hear that.
Much to the distaste of browncoats everywhere, I hope they never bring this show back, for the same reason that I can't watch this movie more than once a month. That much masturbation in a small amount of time cannot be healthy. In closing, I say thank you, Joss Whedon. May God bless you, as you have blessed all of us. And seriously, Mr. Tudyk, if you're in town, I'm still good for that drink. Okay, and moving into our like and dislike segment, this is where we decide completely without a doubt whether we liked the movie or didn't like the movie based on how turned on we got. So Rob, did this movie make you hard or flaccid?
This movie made me harder than Chinese algebra.
Yes! Oh. Carl, hard or flaccid?
Shit. I don't have enough dicks to give this as many dicks up as it gives me.
I'm not touching that with your dick.
One.
Oh, Lisa, wet or frigid?
Soaked.
Ooh, I love it so much. Anyway, and honestly,
someone throw her a lifeline. She's drowning in her panties.
Oh, maybe I've just drank enough that that's funny. But anyway, I just have to point out, and I was actually asked this by a fan personally that lives in my town. Stopped me and asked me this. If, you know, all of the team of debauchery was sleeping together, I have to point out that yes, with exception of the fact that I'm not sleeping with any of them.
And neither for the record is Rob.
Neither for the record is Rob, our honorary.
But we can talk.
Well, I don't know. I'm looking at your picture right now, and I'm just kidding. honestly, as if Rod's rants didn't sum it up, I am so hard for this movie, I've been humping my monitor throughout recording this episode.
That's why you keep getting disconnected.
Exactly.
Well, that could have something to do with the fact that his backdrop is Nathan Fillion's face. So.
It is possible. That man is sexy. And as we've covered before...
And if you're not watching Castle...
Mm,
you
I love
need
Castle.
To watch Castle.
I really need to start watching Castle.
Because not only does Castle have Nathan Fillion and all his awesomeness, it has the sexiest woman currently on primetime television, one Mrs. Stana Katic.
And it gives Nathan Fillion the ability to make fun of himself as much as he wants to.
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely.
And as I've stated before in past episodes, I do have a man crush on Nathan Fillion and Willem Dafoe.
And at least one of those two you could possibly get in your bed.
Yeah, Nathan Fillion's definitely a shoe-in.
Oh, dear.
Okay, so, Rob, do you want to tell our listeners a little bit about your show, Tadpoolery?
Okay, well, Tadpoolery is a show that Brian Provost and Nick Nizzi and I do with Trish Tavenot. And basically, we highlight different members of the Tadpool community. The Tadpool community being the chat room that grew up around all of the Frog Pants shows that Scott Johnson does. And every week we bring somebody on and we chat with them, get to know them a little bit, talk about what they're all about. And we play a little music that you haven't heard and generally wander off on wild, digressive tangents that we never know where they're going to go. And so it's a good time.
Yes. And you're downplaying the quality of music that you play.
I'm pleased to hear you say that. All of the music played on the show are personal friends of mine, and I actually go to them and say, can I play one of your tracks on my podcast? Because that would be really cool. And they all say yes. So
yeah. And again, I reiterate, and I have not listened to the most recent Nepotunism, but the first time you play or the next time you play a bad track will be the first time I've heard it.
Well,
so.
I do appreciate that because I do have a lot of pride in that segment. You know, I'm a musician myself, and this is the community of people that I hang out with. So it's kind of fun to introduce one, you know, this circle of friends to this other circle of friends.
And again, when do we get to hear one of your works?
No kidding.
I'm working on that. I'm working on that.
Well, Rob, just to get this in there, I'll make sure to send you some of my tracks on my, you know, bass guitar as soon as possible. And after you throw them away, you can put some really good music on.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But Absolutely. I've been learning bass now for, what is it, 5 months? 4 months?
Eh.
Something like that.
Got to start somewhere.
Yeah. And it's going really
you
well.
You know, sure.
And I can play pretty much anything by White Stripes.
There you go.
Yeah.
I've only been playing guitar for 14 years now, which, you know, sounds like a long time, but when you realize that I'm 42, I picked it up late in my life, and, you know, I only consider myself an adequate instrumentalist.
Fair enough.
So,
well, I'm going to end this with saying thank you very much for enduring our debauchery this evening, Rob, and dishing a little out yourself.
Don't tend to turn down debauchery when I'm invited to it.
Well, you will definitely find yourself invited to our brand.
Especially if there's, you know, even the smallest chance of gratuitous nudity.
Well, if you'd like, I can send you pictures. Just for the record, I'm hung like a seahorse.
I'd heard that about you.
Yeah. Anyway, before we go any further into this, I'm just going to say join us next week when we take on Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back in the Buff. God, I wish I hadn't have said that right after making that statement. Oh, this could be nasty.
Hey, but at least, you know, we've established the fact that Joss Whedon is God, but Kevin Smith is at least an archangel in that pantheon, so.
Well, I have a lot to say about that, but we're going to go into that next week. So until then, keep watching those movies in the buff, because you know it's just better that way. Good night, guys.
Good night.
Good night.
Hello, Buffers. It's your favorite host. I'm taking a second to let you know you can find us on Facebook and Google+, and have some absolutely naughty conversations with your other buffers. And as always, if you need to talk or flirt with our team of debauchery, you can email us at inthebufffilms@gmail.com. That's 3 F's. Trust me, we love to talk to our fans, especially the good-looking ones. Movies in the Buff was recorded with Creative Commons, Attribution Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 3.0 U.S. License.